to provide some more support to the Alaska Public Radio Network and also give you a chance to relate to the people who make things happen in public broadcasting. Cindy has pioneered this effort this year, and she's done a fabulous job. She and her team at APTI and volunteers from all over the community have done a great job, and I just want to say formally, thank you. Okay, but enough of that. I'd like to introduce you to our keynote speaker tonight. Just to review, however, this lecture series has been really great fun. The first in the series was an event featuring in this room Peter Kenyon, who many of you know as one of the most distinguished foreign correspondents at National Public Radio, and who began his career in Alaska working for the Alaska Public Radio Network. He's been covering the Middle East for NPR now for about a dozen years, and he's based now in Istanbul, has done terrific work, and he was here to share some of that. Then we had a talk, actually down at the museum, with Richard Nelson, who's the host of Encounters, which is one of our very favorite programs that comes out of Alaska on public broadcasting. And earlier this month, we had Leanne Hansen, who's been the longtime Sunday morning host for Weekend Edition, who was kind of on her farewell tour. She's retiring from NPR this year, and she gave us really a warm conversational lecture here in the room. Tonight, we have with us Marcia Bemko, a different kind of approach. We've had the hardcore foreign correspondent, and we had the Alaska feature presentation and the Sunday feature from NPR, and tonight we have the brains and the genius behind Antiques Roadshow, a show that many of you know on public broadcasting. The executive producer is Marcia Bemko. She's been in public broadcasting now for pretty close to 30 years.
Wow, that ages me.
Sorry.
Yes, it's true.
But Antiques Roadshow has been nominated for Emmys 8 times. She's the author of the book Antiques Roadshow Behind the Scenes. Before her career at Antiques Roadshow, starting in 1999, she worked in a variety of public affairs programs for PBS at WGBH in Boston. A very distinguished career in our industry. I'd like to introduce Marcia Bemko.
Hi there, folks.
Well, I'll tell you, as excited as you are to have a tiny taste of Roadshow tonight, I am just as excited to be here in Alaska. My personal feat for me is that I've now been in every state. That was a lifetime, took a lifetime to do it, and I did it. Lucky me. I have the best job in the world, I really do. I am very privileged. I get to see the most unusual and the best things that are out there, because when they come to our show, I get to see them. I also get to know 150 of the country's top experts, because that's who we're working with to provide the information. Our experts, you have your favorites in there, I'm sure. And they are teaching between 10 and 11 million people a week. That's how many people are watching Antiques Roadshow. But they're also teaching me. That does make us PBS's most popular primetime series, and we have been for a long time. Interestingly enough, our ratings are the highest they've been in 5 years. Go figure, I don't know why. Yes, it's all our doing. That's what I have to say. The big thing that when you watch Antiques Roadshow, and you see those wonderful big finds where people come in and they are overjoyed to hear that they have a $50,000 object, a $100,000 object. And you hear the story. Most people, they inherit them, they buy them, whatever. This is a very lucky thing to have happen. Now, when you watch Roadshow and you hear somebody bought an item for $5 and it's worth $50,000, well, how would you like to be that seller? Nobody wants to be that seller, and that's one of the reasons we're making the show. We want to make sure that you are not that seller. And for those who inherit objects, and you see that happen on our show all the time, and very often that is where valuable things are, because people keep valuable things in the family. And mark my words, No matter what it's worth, when it's inherited, people do not usually sell the object. Ever. Very rarely. We can tell you stories about where they do. Now, I don't know if you all remember our highest value object from this season that we're now airing. We are now airing season 15, and we are getting ready to go out and shoot season 16. Did anybody see this appraisal? That's the Alexander Calder Mobile. And this woman was stunned. And really what I want to show you is, and I have to get a little used to this remote here, is this is it up close. It kind of looks like a coat hanger. I don't mean to insult Alexander Calder. This object is worth $400,000 to $1 million. Nice coat hanger. In half the cities we go to, we do not find a six-figure object. The woman that you saw there with the Calder Mobile, she inherited that from an aunt. Great story about how Calder gave it to her aunt because she had needle-pointed a pillow of one of his pieces of work. So the next day, this sculpture came to the aunt in Manhattan in a paper bag. She had had it appraised for $35,000 and was really surprised to hear the value had gone up. Now what you're seeing is a more typical story for people who own great things if they didn't inherit them. This is a man who came into, I need my notes, Raleigh. And he bought this painting. He paid $75,000 for it. Yeah, that's a lot of money. I'm not buying any paintings for that much money this year. That painting was valued at $450,000 for insurance. Good investment now, huh? Maybe we'd all scrape around for 75 if we knew it would turn into that. That is the true story of how you acquire great antiques, by the way. You pay good money for them. And that is the big lesson. Finding a $50,000 object for $5 is like finding an unscratched lottery ticket for that's a big, big winner. This is one of my favorite big winners. This is from Palm Springs. This is Marilyn Monroe's dress that she wore in Some Like It Hot. The man who's standing there inherited this, and he brought in others. We only featured one that he inherited from his partner. We appraised this for $150,000 to $250,000, this dress from Some Like It Hot. And girls, let me tell you, this thing is tiny. It was like a size 2. What's really interesting about it, and I got to touch it, when it was made for her, she was stitched into it naked. Yeah, I touched it. I'll tell you, one of my favorites on the reel that I have coming up for you, it's not a six-figure object, and I'm going to save that for later, but that's our Sinatra letter. It isn't always about the money. And frankly, the reason we love the stories on Roadshow are because they teach us something about our country, ourselves, and ooh, there's that little surprise at the end. It may be rare. Now, when we go to a city, we are lost, frankly, about where we are. I have been asked in a convention center when we're going crazy, where are we, and I search around for a minute. Oh, yeah, we're here. Even those of us who've been to all these cities, and even those of us who are a lot younger than me, may not always remember where we were last year. So well, you'll notice we make 3 episodes of television from every city we visit. And in each of those episodes, we do what we call a field piece. This particular field piece is being done in Grand Rapids. It was a couple seasons ago, but I'm not changing this picture because people laugh when they see it. We shot this because this was shot at the Gilmore Car Museum. This particular vehicle is a 1930 Rolls-Royce Gnomobile that was used in the 1967 Disney movie. And we're trying to give you a sense of place in Michigan. What we're doing right now behind the scenes is we are sorting through stories for all the cities where we'll be going this summer. By the way, where are we going this summer? I'm going to say the word Oregon right. Did I do it? Eugene, Oregon. Yeah, somebody fixed me the other night. Eugene, Oregon, El Paso, Minnesota, Tulsa, Atlanta, and Pittsburgh. And that's where we're heading. And as we get ready right now, we are now taking stories, pitches for ideas about what we should shoot in your city. As a matter of fact, I've already heard ideas from folks about what we should shoot if we were to come to Alaska. Ooh, hang on for that. When we come to a city, one of the things we need are ideally 100,000 square feet of space. We can make the show work with 75,000 to 80,000 square feet of space. But this is what it looks like when we roll into a city. We enter an empty convention center. This is our mobile unit. Pay attention to the outside of this unit because I'm going to show you the inside in a few slides later. This is our grip and lighting truck. This is where the set is stored and all the lights and lighting trusses. If, in fact, we put one more thing in the truck, we have to take something out, unless it's the size of a piece of paper. It is stocked to the ceiling and to the doors. And nothing of any size can go in there without something coming out at this point. This is us getting ready to build the set. And this is what it looks like after it's built. You've all seen that. And here's another view of what it looks like from the center. Slide's a little dark, I apologize. And I know you're all wondering, so I'm not going to make you wonder anymore. Are we going to come to Alaska? Yes, you've asked me over and over. We want to come to Alaska. One of the things my colleague Christina Regan and I were doing while we were here is looking at your convention center. And although it's a little small for us, we're going to go back and work with the team. Alaska Public Television wants us here. We want to be here. There are some challenges to coming. It is a more expensive city for us, and Alaska Public Health will have to help us raise a little extra money to be here. That being said, we are going to try and make it work. We want to come back. You know, it's hard to see with these hot lights on me here, but has anybody ever been to a road show? One hand. Am I missing another hand? Two hands. What city were you in? Give a shout. Seattle. Memphis. Ooh, you saw the Elvis thing. So were you near the front of the line or the back? If you were near the front of the line, what you heard, we as we get ready to start shooting that day, we all pull to the center and we get the volunteers and others revved up for the day and we yell the word roadshow as we lift our hands up. And you're seeing us there like a spoke of a wheel getting ready to lift those hands up. That's our big technical signal to the event producer that we're ready for her to let the crowd in. And when that crowd comes in, that's what a roadshow looks like. Those are folks waiting on the other side of the set in a convention center, which is what in many, down in that lower 48, they have bigger convention centers. So that's a hall in a convention center. It is never ceases to amaze us what people will bring into Antiques Roadshow. And when they come in, the first thing they get is an event guide. Why do we do this? A lot of what we do is counterintuitive. And we want to make sure people understand what we're telling them about their antiques, what the process is with the show, and it does help. After they get that event guide, they're going to go through an area we call triage. Now, years ago, we had a group in that makes corrections to things we're doing. There's a survey on us. And they said, you should not call that area triage. It reminds people of, you know, blood and guts and things. That's the only suggestion we didn't take. We still call it triage. At triage, you're going to get a category ticket. There are 75 experts on set, approximately, covering about 25 categories. And some of it's really easy. Jewelry is jewelry. But do you have folk art or decorative arts? Is that going to go to metalworks or silver? And we've had people argue with us that they're wonderful print really is a painting and it should go to paintings, but we will send them once more onto prints. After you leave triage, you're going to enter our set, and that's what it looks like, not from overhead, to enter the roadshow set. And one of the things that never ceases to amaze us, and there is another view of that set. I just can't get, even I've been on that set for many, many years. I'm impressed with that shot. What always does impress us is what some people will think to bring. That's a lamppost. The cutest thing I ever saw brought in was a woman who brought in her whole bedroom set with the mattress. Yeah, that's pretty funny. The typical thing that happens, a roadshow, by the way, we're going to see about 5,000 people at every roadshow. Two objects each. That's 10,000 objects we're going to look at that day. We're going to tape about 90 of them. And that is what happens. Most of the other guests, the other 4,990, are going to get an appraisal at the table. And they're going to find out what their object is worth, what it was used for, how old it is, and what its value is. And by the way, most of what we see is worth less than $100. Great things are rare, always. So what you see that we feature on Roadshow are some of the better things. We see many great, we have the odds are with us because we see so much. But the majority of what we see is precious to the person who brought them in, but does not have any demand in the market. So that's Kathy Bailey at the glass table. And that's our guys on Asian arts. You may recognize some of the experts there. We've got Marvin Sokolow and Black Mason, and I can't see so well from here. And most of our guests walk away a winner, even if they don't get earth-shattering news about what's going to be their fabulous value on antiques. They have learned something about their object. Very often we have people coming in wondering, did this come from, we're somewhere in the middle of the country. I'm not sure whether this came from Connecticut or from Virginia or from, and we can tell you, our experts can tell you something about that object that solves a family mystery a bit. We may not be able to solve it all, but we can help give a little context there. So occasionally we're stumped, but most of our guests walk away a winner. We have some grumps, but they're just few and far between, we hope. What happens for those things that you get to see on TV? This is Nick Dawes. He's behind the curtains there in glass. And what Nick has done is he's taking a guest into the back so that he can pitch the item to either me or two people who work with me. And that guest, when they've come up to the table, instead of getting the typical information, the expert says, do you mind waiting for a producer? If that guest learns something from one of our experts before we tape it, we won't tape it. Roadshow is an honest show. There are no fake reactions. There are no, what you see is what you get, except we edit it down. Instead of 10 minutes per appraisal, it's 3. Trust me, you're happy about that. But this is Nick Dawes putting somebody behind glass to get ready so that he can do the pitch. What happens during the pitch is that's me behind the curtain. When I go to listen to a pitch, Nick will teach me everything he knows about the object, and I'm doing that out of range of the guest's hearing. I like to try and guess it before he tells me. And the rule of thumb, guys, for guessing, and 90% of the time you'll be right, 3 to 5. Just 3 to 5, 3 to 5,000, 3 to 500, 3 to 5, you're right. I'm serious, 3 to 5, 2 to 4. And I talk with the guest after talking with the expert to find out what they know, how they got the item, all the kinds of questions a person would ask. And what's really interesting, of many, many years of interviewing different people, people are interesting. They're not always as candid or forthright as they might be. The impolite word is they lie. And they But frankly, you get good at this, and you can tell after a while. And my favorite roadshow guests for television are those who know a little something about what they brought. And I tell people this the minute I interview them. Knowing nothing is not the answer. You paid $3,000 and you knew nothing about it? Maybe they went with that first rule of buying, buy what you like. But nonetheless, we suss out a lot of information. You need to own your object. 100% own it. You can't hold it with your sister. You can own it with your husband, because that's how the laws in this country work. But you can't own it with your siblings and others. And that way we avoid any scandal. And then after that, we're going to, and this picture's never leaving the presentation either. Yes, we went to Hawaii. Yes, Hawaii Public Health helped us raise the extra money to do it. It can be done, folks. It can be done. And this is me telling the record manager in the middle of the set that, in fact, I've selected somebody to be recorded. We also have to give the person that we're sending to the green room, which is a slide coming up where they get ready to record, a slip to go into the green room. Otherwise, people will actually try to sneak in the green room and pretend they're ready to be recorded. Like we're not going to notice. It's so funny. And then we give people a little star treatment. We have our two makeup artists set up in the back. One's doing the appraiser, one's doing the guests. They're moving frantically because we're going to record in the middle about 55 appraisals, and those people all need makeup. And there's Louise. Our makeup artist has been traveling with us all these years, putting on, let's see, back of the head, Peter Szymanski, I think. One of our fabulous jewelers. What I'm always impressed with, and I love this photo because I think it really just screams what our experts are feeling. Most of our experts are the children of dealers, collectors, auctioneers. And they've been doing this for decades. Even a young man or woman. And it's the only way, by the way, to be able to do what they do. They sure do make it look easy. They do have some help. They're always checking underneath things, checking around things. We travel with, see that road box in the back there? That road box is open. There are still some things that are not on the internet. And we travel with a road box of reference books. We also travel with, we have art databases, computers, and if that won't do it, see John Buxton on his cell phone? How many fakes has he done? Are you sick of his fakes? The man sees African art, a lot of fakes in his area of expertise. If they don't know the answer, for the most part, they know someone who does. And he's calling to find out some information. Now, while all of that's happening, and we're getting ready out in front, we're deciding who's going to be shot, we're deciding whether or not we want to shoot it, we've put them in the green room. This is our director and our set decorator on set, preparing the interview area. And how that works, because we don't want to stop taking me for a second. This is one of three interview areas. Something's being shot on the other side of the set. So the cameras are always swinging around. You figure with 50 appraisals, if you lose 1 minute per appraisal, that's 50 minutes. That's 5 appraisals. So we are constantly moving, constantly keep things moving, because every producer, by the way, we never have enough footage. Ever, ever, ever. So we need more footage. And this is the inside of the mobile unit. I showed you the outside earlier. See that bottle of Tums? That is a hard job in there. There's a bottle of aspirin in there as well. We have two directors, one outside on the set helping, one inside directing. And he is directing the 4 cameras from the multi-unit, where we're capturing all those appraisals you imagine you see. We also do the single cameras, which you've seen that as well, which don't go through the truck. But this is everything that's going through our mobile unit. And this is, we're going to get ready to tape it. And that's Kathy Bailey, what it looks like from the center of the set where many of our crew are working, and a view you very rarely see. But what I'd like to do next is show you an appraisal. So let's play that DVD you got up there, and I'll come back with some more slides.
It's not about the things
we have.
These
are our sponsors. We love them.
But the memories we make with them. Liberty Mutual Insurance, proud sponsor of Antiques Roadshow.
At Subaru, we believe in protecting your precious cargo, whether it's your kids, pets, or an 18th century Parisian bookcase. Subaru, a proud sponsor of Antiques Roadshow.
And by contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.
Host of Antiques Roadshow, and I am here to tell you about the most popular show on public television. And I'm not the only one talking about it.
Now, you never know. You might have something valuable in the garage or in the attic, too. And where do you go to find out if it's trash or treasure? The Antiques Roadshow.
Probably the most popular show on PBS right now is the Antiques Roadshow. I'm sure a lot of you have seen that program.
My favorite part of that whole show is the people in the background, you know? If aliens ever wanted to see what we're all about, they should just bring that tape back to their planet. Let me show you what we're dealing with here.
Are you talking about the Antiques Roadshow?
Yes, I'm talking about Antiques Roadshow.
With millions of viewers nationwide every week, America and Hollywood, it seems, loves Antiques Roadshow.
Well, let's see what we've got here, shall we? Ah, yes. Well, this appears to be a Meissen teapot from, I would say, the early 18th century. It's beautifully done, although the gold in the scrollwork here is a little bit brighter than we usually see on these pieces. Have you any idea how much this is worth?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. We were hoping for Grandma's sake. $5,000?
Well, I hate to disappoint you, but this is worth $30,000.
What?
It's not so much an antique, but it's very telling of its era, which was the late mid-90s to the early late mid-90s. And I'll do this one.
So, Martin, what can you tell us about this pewter clock?
Well, it is a clock set in the stomach of what appears to be a bear.
Actually, it's much more than that. It's Russian, made in the mid-19th century. It was made by Andrei Karagin, who worked for Tsar Alexander II.
That is pretty much what I figured.
I don't know if you're descended from the Romanovs, Martin, but all of Karagin's known bear clocks were done exclusively for the Romanov family and are now in the Hermitage Museum in St. Petersburg. Martin, you may be surprised to learn that this clock at auction would easily bring $25,000.
Ka-ching!
Imitation is flattering, but check out this real Roadshow treasure.
I always read the Chicago Daily News, and my favorite columnist was Mike Royko, always for the underdog. Frank Sinatra was in Chicago to perform. And of course, all these little ladies on Michigan Avenue are always getting mugged on State Street. And Mike Royko wrote a column about the fact that Frank Sinatra had half the Chicago police force acting as his bodyguards on this whole floor of a hotel. And so he wrote a kind of a cute, funny column that, where were all the policemen? Well, they were taking care of old Blue Eyes. Well, old Blue Eyes didn't appreciate the column and fired off this letter to Mike Royko. So Mike published it in the Daily News and said he would sell that letter to the highest bidder and the money would go to the Salvation Army. So I decided I'd bid on the letter. And I had a $400 Mother's Day check from my big family, and I was sitting there and I said, I'll bid $400. And maybe a couple weeks later, the phone rang, I picked it up. This is Mike Royko. I just let out a holler. And so that was the story of how I got the letter.
And it's a historic letter because Mike put it in his column, and Frank was really ticked off about what Mike said. And so he has a few choice words for Mike. He says, firstly, let me start this note by saying, I don't know you and you don't know me. And he goes on to say, basically, where are you coming up with this stuff? I don't have cronies. You know, the police force is being generous. That's not my fault. Why don't you take it up with them? He says, quite frankly, I don't understand why people don't spit in your eye three or four times a day. This is Frank talking to Mike here.
That sounds like Frank.
You know, he talks about his tough reputation and that no one else can prove that type of allegation. And then he calls Mike Royko a pimp.
That was the blow.
I mean, this is just amazing stuff. Lastly, he says, I will allow you to pull my hairpiece. If it moves, I will give you another $100,000. If it does not, I punch you in the mouth. How about it? He signs it Sinatra and then copyrights it. So if it's ever published, it has to be published in full. Over here, we have Royko's columns. And these two are his responses to Sinatra's letter, where he talks about how he plans on auctioning it off after he found out that people were interested in the letter and he wanted the money to go to a good cause, the Salvation Army. I conferred with some of my colleagues here, and we all agree that it is the best Sinatra letter we ever read.
Doesn't it sound just like him?
Oh, it's him all the way.
And when he called him a pimp,
oh boy,
there were headlines in a lot of papers then.
Absolutely.
About the pimp letter.
I bet. And it's still a famous letter, and people remember it today. And as such, I would estimate it at auction at least $15,000.
And
I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, no.
I wouldn't be surprised if this letter sold for more than that, because Sinatra stuff is as hot as it can get, and it just doesn't get any better than this.
Oh,
so with all the provenance and your great story,
it's
just such a great piece. I was so happy that you brought it in today.
Oh gee, I'm gonna faint. I'm gonna faint. I really.
Are you all right?
Oh, yes, give me a seat. Oh, man. Are they kidding me? Did you all hear that? Did you all hear that?
Yes.
Oh, and he offered me $100 for it. You can't have it for $100. Isn't that super? I'm going to give that money. If I ever sell it, the money goes to Salvation Army.
Oh, that would be
so
good.
So the more the merrier.
There you go.
Oh, listen, you just made my... did you hear that, Betty?
I know. I heard it. That must be nuts.
It's wonderful.
Nothing beats the suspense and drama of Antiques Roadshow.
When you pulled this out, I almost lost it.
Wow. There's like one of four known in America. You have one of them.
Oh, my God.
That's awesome.
Are you kidding me?
I wasn't going to be surprised, but you got me.
You see us everywhere, but you'll find us on PBS.
This is my lucky day.
You know, I can't tell you how many times I've seen that appraisal. And my face is, hello? Do I look as happy as I feel after watching that? What a moment. And let me tell you, one of the things I'm really proud of there, and that is that this is just one of many objects where Roadshow is the first documenter. And you hear, even in the little clips where John Solo tells the guests, there are only four known in the country, and you have one of them. Prior to that day, there were only three known in the country. And if you've been watching this season and you saw the laugh box that Gary Summers did in Miami Beach, that was Charlie Douglas's first the invention for an audience reaction. No one even knew what had happened to this item. Some man got lucky and bought it out of a storage locker, a man who basically sells washing machines when he buys things out of storage lockers. And he's the one who got lucky. He got this in some storage locker. So really proud of the fact that we continue. Antiques are a young field, and we will be first documenters as long as we tour. because there's still a lot of scholarly research going on, and we're helping to contribute to what the field is learning, and that is something to really be proud of. The great lessons in Roadshow. And let's see what happened to my slides. Here we go. See this table here? This is a table that came into Antiques Roadshow. And this is one of the furniture pieces that we picked up. Now, you see the furniture that's in the background of the set of Antiques Roadshow? What we're doing right now is people are registering for tickets because the demand on tickets is so great that more people will want to come to a roadshow than we can possibly see. We give out to the public 3,000 pairs. We also give some to the public television stations to raise money. And we give out a total of 3,600 pairs. That's 7,200 tickets. If all those people showed up, we'd be in trouble. It is a free ticket, and there is an attrition that we count on for it to be a free ticket. People often ask us, why don't we charge for tickets? Because most people are getting a 30-second appraisal. There just isn't anything else to say about their objects, and they'd be mad at us. In addition, people are sending us right now, in addition to registering for tickets, and the record we have set, by the way, for ticket registration is 34,000 pairs in Raleigh. In this year, Christina, it's Minneapolis that I think we're going to break it. When we left last week, we were at 33,000 and change, and we've still got to April 18th. That number is often very driven by population size, of course, but even for our low registrations, we will not be able to make everybody happy who wants to come. How do we do this afterwards? It's random drawing. And we allow people to register with postcards as well. And no, even though we've been accused of it, we don't pick from special zip codes. No, we don't do that. And the reason we don't do it first come, first serve is the 1 year we use Ticketmaster. We self-ticket now. The tickets were gone in about 5 minutes. And that just isn't fair, is it? So whether you use the computer or you still using a postcard, we will continue to data entry and get your postcard in there so you too can have the same equal chance that anybody else has when they register for those tickets. And, of course, your public television station will pledge. We will give them some to pledge as well. And the other way to get into the show is send us pictures of your furniture. Yeah, you see those furniture pieces that are in the background on the set. And what we will do is move between 8 and 10 pieces of furniture. And right now we are receiving pictures of furniture. Do you know, though, some people send us pictures of furniture, but really it's their belly button and toes. Yeah, they'd like take a picture like this and send it to us. So we have what is called, in our office, the wall of shame, and those pictures go on it. Some of them are very amusing. Most people send in normal pictures, though, and of their furniture. And from that, what we do is we will have one of our experts, usually Michael Flanagan or Kerry Shrives, will come in and look through those pictures. And then they will select, because someone will call from the office and make arrangements to move 10 pieces. Well, they will have to select 20 pieces because inevitably you will call somebody and say, we picked your furniture. Little do they know how the odds are, we're not going to pick you. And then they, oh, no, you're not going to move it. So that's why we have 20 names, so all the people who thought they wanted us to move it can say no. This was one that we did move in, and boy, the appraisers were excited about this. And one other lesson, though, I want to insert. Inevitably, with those furniture pieces, we move reproductions unintentionally. A good and ethical appraiser will not value your items by photo. And they can tell you often from a photo what something isn't, but not what something is. So this is one that was picked to come in. And boy, oh boy, the Kinos are fighting with Mike Flanagan because on Friday we're going to decide to tape 3 of the furniture pieces that are in because we don't want to waste any time. We want to start taping the minute the guests are in the room. And that table is worth quite a bit of money. It's a New York tea table, mid-18th century, and it is appraised for $60,000 to $80,000. That's a lot of money. However, had the top knot been replaced, that would be a $200,000 to $400,000 table. And had the galley not been replaced, going around the side there, that's a $500,000 table. So, lessons in that, this was handed down in the family. You can be sure they probably won't sell this. These repairs were done many, many years before the owners who brought it in brought it to us. But that family rescued that table. And let's face it, how many of us own a table that's worth $60,000 to $80,000? It's a lot of money for one piece of table. We always like to keep in mind, and by the way, who got to tape that appraisal? Well, boy, were those Kinos upset when Mike Flanagan got it. Yeah, they're very, what's an interesting thing about our experts is that they are the top in the country. These are the men and women who routinely sell objects for six and seven figures. And nobody's shy. Nobody is shy, and they are in an ambitious group of folks. So it's always interesting to see what happens with those wars. Ultimately, I decide, but it sure is fun to watch them fight before I do it. Very mean, huh? Now, another little sneak preview that I'm giving you is our website. And I'll often say you could go watch all our appraisals on our website. This is a draft of our new homepage. It is not done. It will not look like this when it's done, but I said I wanted to show you something that nobody else would get to see. And we're getting ready to do that, but you can be sure there'll be some more changes. People often ask me, when people come to Roadshow, boy, I would sell that. I would sell that. Most people who come, no matter what it's worth, do not sell. And there's a really good reason for that. The day you sell it, you can't afford to buy it back. A fair and honest price for a dealer to pay you is half of what he can sell it for. Anybody do retail? That's how retail works. A dealer could sit on something for sometimes over a couple of years even before he sells it. At auction, unless you have something of extreme value, you will pay a seller's premium. You've got something great, you won't have to pay it because they'll just be happy to get the buyer's premium. But there is always a cost to sell, even on eBay. And so the day you sell it, you can't afford to buy it back. And that's a real, by the way, it's a listening tip for when you watch Antiques Roadshow. You will hear our auctioneers say it's worth 3 to 5 at auction. And you will hear our dealers say it's worth 3 to 5 retail. That is the market they know, and that is what they're comfortable with. I have often asked, I know before what's going to happen on camera, I know the guest inherited the object, and I will often say to the expert, make sure you could, you know, if they say, I'll never sell it, give them an insurance value. Because by the way, depending upon the object, it's $5,000 at auction, $10,000 retail, and $12,000 for insurance is the same price. Okay, so context is really important when you're listening. And the trickiest thing about antiques, that even though I've been producing this show for 11 years, I know a dangerous amount, but I could not go into the business of buying and selling them because I don't touch enough every day. Our experts are working 5, 6, sometimes 7 days a week. I once asked Mike Flanagan, I said, I can tell the difference between a $2,000 piece and a $20,000 piece of furniture we were talking about. How do I learn to do it between $20,000 and $200,000? Because the only reason I would spend that, buy a $20,000 high boy, is to sell it for $200,000. Of course, in disguise. Can you imagine the headline? PBS producer rips off old lady. but hey, listen, if it's at auction, it's all fair, right? The market decides then. And his answer, Mike Flanagan, it's great advice, and it's very true. Go to a lot of museums. There are no shortcuts for learning what they have learned to do over decades. And unless it's jewelry, they could see a good item coming from across the room. I have been to a flea market with Mike Flanagan. He calls it aerobic shopping. And he's moving like this. So, and by the way, very rarely does somebody sell on our show. They have those reasons, especially with those inherited objects. We could tell you stories. I can tell you several stories about people who sold their objects. Usually, it's not an inherited item. And, the Susan Frackleton pot that the woman paid $5 or $15, I'm forgetting now, it was worth $17,000, she sold it. But she didn't have any sentimental value on that pot. So let me put your expectations into place, because you understand rare. Half the cities we go to, no six-figure objects, but we're all on the hunt. Me too. I'm always looking. Biggest tip that I can give you is buy what you like. You'll always enjoy living with it. Educate yourself about it, because you can't learn enough. Buy one of a kind, not mass-produced. But of course, there's an exception to that rule, right? When you see some rare posters and other things. If buying for investment and you're going to be spending five figures or more, work with somebody unless you really know what you're doing. Quality counts, condition matters. By the way, condition. Because it can devalue a piece of glass by 90% or other things. Signatures matter, but beware of fakes. When we see Tiffany glass, 90% of the Tiffany glass we see is fake. 10% is right. As Ali Salka has said to me, the glass should tell you who made it. Then you turn it over and see if you're right. That's how an expert works. Learn to buy at auction. Learn to buy from dealers. Learn to buy online, because that is what's happening out there. Avoid family Bibles, Singer sewing machines, and anything Mark limited edition. And once you've bought it, pay good attention to it. Provenance matters, so save your receipts, save all those things. You've seen it on our show, so you want to keep all that. And ultimately, of course, watch Antiques Roadshow. Read the book, because great objects, you're learning one at a time. So I want to do some Q&A, because otherwise all of a sudden there won't be any time and you'll all be going home to bed. And I'll just keep talking. Do you have any questions? Because we have a mic over on this side of the room so everybody can hear your questions. Let me give you one little tip about your questions. I'm not an expert, so I can't answer your questions on what your table with your Macintosh tiles are worth. But trust me, because I do many of these events, we don't want you to ask those questions even if we had an expert, because most others in the audience don't care about the answer. So asking questions about your specific antiques, I would advise you not to do it. I won't give you a satisfying answer, but please, questions? Or you don't even have to walk. Yes, ma'am, and I'll repeat your question. I can hear you. All right, now, obviously I have not done a good job of explaining myself. She asked this lovely lady's asked, if she were accepted to come to one show, could she come to the others? We produce one event on one day, and from that we make three episodes of television. So what we do is, the Roadshow staff, when we're coming to a city, on Wednesday, Mark Wahlberg, myself, and a few others, Mark Wahlberg's crew, enter the city. Mark's going to start shooting on Thursday morning one of those field pieces. We need three, one for each episode of television. On Thursday, all the crew from Boston, about 45 people, fly in from Boston. And then on Friday, most of the experts are coming in on that day. Of course, unless they're going to a place like Alaska and everybody's coming early and staying late, because people make vacations around places like this. But that's how we do it. And we spend all day Friday. The reason they fly in on Thursday is there is a 6:30 call on set to get the set built on Friday. We shoot the show on Saturday. Our first guest, those tickets are done by timed entry. The first tickets are at 8 o'clock, and then every hour after that. And the last ticket is at 5. We hope if we finish the last appraisal by 7. And we've lessened how many tickets we give out, because we were there at 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. And after that, the crew is striking the set, because everybody's flying home on Sunday. So we're there for 5 days, and one event gives us three delicious episodes of Roadshow. Yeah. So you can come once, because that's all we'll be there.
One year, and then you want to go back 5 years later. Oh dear.
Good idea.
I have to tone it down a little bit. All right, you get accepted in 1999, and now I want to go again in 2011. Is there a chance? The computer.
As ticket selection, it is done randomly.
Yes.
So there is you. We have groupies who follow us around the country. They get really lucky. Which isn't easy to do because we only allow you to enter your net. We tell you the rules are you can only enter once. And we will dedupe if you enter more than once, and we will pick the city for you. And we'll just decide which one. You can come anytime. We are reluctant in any city. We will not tape two people from the same family because guess what? Rich families have great things. And how interesting is it to see the sister, the brother, the mother, the father, everybody's brought something. We will only tape one from a family. And that's one of our little rules that we have around that. And if you've been to our show before and we've taped you before, we're going to ask a lot of questions. Other questions? Yes, sir.
If I have an item that's documented by the Smithsonian Institute, is known to be the only one to exist, how would I contact somebody to market this item?
All right, so how could you sell, what is the object? What kind of category? What does it fall into?
It's a whistle.
I'm sorry?
It's a whistle.
It's a whistle? It's, like a blow it? Whistle?
It's a 4,500-year-old whistle.
That's an old whistle.
And I've...
And I won't go into it, but obviously you've decided to part with it potentially.
Stephen Loring from the Smithsonian Institute documented it about 15 years ago.
So it's got good, this whistle has great provenance, hits history, it's documented history. He has provenance from the Smithsonian. And if I, do you have any idea what it's worth?
No.
Okay, so if I were going to be selling something and I had no idea what it was worth, you can be sure I'd ask at least three people. I'd ask a dealer, and I'd ask an auctioneer, and then I'd ask another dealer and another auctioneer, depending upon the answer from those first two. If you've got something worth a few hundred dollars, it's not worth all that effort. And unless you really trust somebody, you can't count on one answer. God bless, I do not want to hurt the antiques industry. Assume you cannot trust the person you're talking to. Do not assume trust. People are often tempted to, a good dealer will not appraise your item if he's interested in buying it. But you can be sure there are plenty who break that rule. And if anybody does, run away. And if you have something of value, it's like selling a house. Would you talk to one real estate agent? Maybe up here in Alaska you do, but I don't know. You talk competitively. So if I were you, and I don't know enough about your object to know where it came from and all those kinds of things, and I don't know enough about the experts who live up here, but ideally I'd look for somebody to show it to up here to see if I could get some information. And a dealer or an auctioneer will look for nothing because they want to sell it. Or you can pay for an appraisal. What we do on Roadshow technically is a verbal approximation of value. Appraisals are written documents that insurance companies require and you need to pay for. And an appraisal, which will cost you some money, gives you a sense of its full insurance value. Another questions? I saw a bunch of hands. Yeah.
It's a twofold question. Number one, what do you pay the appraisers? And number two, is there any agreement between the show and the appraisers as to any subsequent contact with anyone whose object they have appraised on the show?
You are so smart. Love those questions. I'm so glad you asked them. The experts donate their time, their services, Their flights they pay for. They pay for their own hotel rooms. We give them lunch on Saturday. Aren't we awesome? They donate collectively over the season about $1 million worth of services to WGBH PBS. And they love it. Yeah. So, yes. I'm really glad you asked that. And then the second thing I'm really glad you asked. If, in fact, you want somebody to sell your arts and crafts pot at auction, there aren't many people who get you better money than David Rago. There are other auction houses that get you great money, but that's what he's famous for. We're not going to get in your way if you want to sell your pot. We want you to go ahead and use David Rago. But that being said, even if you ask him on set, can he sell it, and he answers yes, he will get thrown off the show. It is a conflict of interest for an expert to appraise your things and then have an interest in buying. That expert must wait until he flies out of town, and you cannot contact him until you contact him after we've left town. He cannot see you while we're there. She cannot see you while we're there. But we have their information on our website to make it easy enough that if you want to follow up, and we also have the information at the event, that you can find them. But we're going to keep our event clean, honest. What we provide at Roadshow, unlike any other antique programming out there, is pure information. No commerce corrupting our information. And trust me, what you're seeing on cable, I will not slander any particular show, it's a small world. And we're hearing what's going on behind the scenes. There's salt in the lockers. They're salting the lines, i.e., even our experts have been asked to provide items so that people can bring them to those shows.
Or should we have one here?
Show. Yes, sir. I'm long-winded. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yes. You had said that you're allowed two items or two objects. I was curious when you have collections of things, like I've seen collections of posters and collections of this and that. How is that?
We've actually gotten really good at how do we deal with collections. Well, some people throw a bunch of rings in a box and call it a collection, and it's not. And if, in fact, your collection isn't really a collection, we will ask you, and we now give out written information about it, to select an item from your collection that represents it, because the expert does not have time to look at your 50 objects and appraise each one. So what we do with an object is ask the guest to select something representative for the expert to appraise. If, in fact, usually the lines are very long, and it's not fair for one person to consume that time of time. So that's how we bring collections to come in. Of course, when we feature a collection on air, we talk about all the items that we put on the table. And we often don't put the whole collection on the table, you'll note. It's just overwhelming. We once had somebody bring in 9 Rubbermaid containers stacked high of his collection. Now that's how we deal with that. Another question.
I've got a quick question. When you're working with items that have, you know, like cultural value, like cultural artifacts, how often do you get involved with issues of repatriation where somebody realizes that their item came from a community that, you know, where it was taken from? Do you get involved with issues of repatriation for those sort of items?
We do not follow up with our guests after they've left our show. Frankly, it's not our item, and it's really none of our business. What we will talk about on our air, especially with, are the kinds of objects that come in that may have been used, whether it's by Native Americans or one of the indigenous folks to Alaska, is that whether or not the object, what it was made for. Was it made for trade? Was it made for ceremony? And therefore, what kind of impact that has on the market for it and selling it. But one of the things that we don't, and you'll notice on our air, we avoid doing, is giving you a specific advice about what to do with your object. And whether, other than maybe restoring it. But as far as you should donate it to a museum, and even that kind of advice, if you ever hear it on our air, it's because it's uneditable out. Because it's, as I say to our experts, when they give advice like, you should donate it to a museum, like you would? Because they'd sell it to the museum. Museums buy things too. So I don't want them. So we're very careful about what kind of advice. And I imagine here in Alaska, you're very sensitive to some of the objects that could be out there in the market. But we do stay away from giving specific advice to a specific person. But if something comes up that gives us an opportunity to talk about it, we sure do.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Do you have on your website a list of databases that we could access, reference databases?
We don't have on our website reference databases, only because we don't give that free advertising to anybody. If we were going to do something like that, then we'd make them pay us. But I will tell you that we do use ArtFact and other databases so that we can look up comparables. Our experts belong to many. At our paintings table, where you'll see the longest lines, they actually sit with computers right at the table, with databases open because it's such a tricky market. But we don't do it on our site, but they are easy to find. One of the ones we use a lot is ArtFact. And by the way, if you wanted to look something up, I do believe they either have a free trial or short term to pay to look. Another question.
Not only do I enjoy the antiques that folks bring in, but I also like the little excursions that Mark take us to in the different cities. Like, and I'm wondering, does the producer choose the places? For instance, if you were to come up here, that we would probably make an excursion also.
We do, and interestingly enough, you could see folks just titillating. They want to be one of those pieces already. Once we announce we're coming to your city, our experts immediately will start to pitch pieces that they want us to tape. And in addition, we will receive pitches or from the folks probably at the museum here and others and who will pitch us to come shoot. In some cities, for those three segments that we select, we can be choosing from a list of 50. So there are, in some cities, we can be scraping around to look for three. And so it really does depend, but ultimately we're listening to every pitch that comes in. We have people who, we listen to it. We put it on the big list. And then our goal, in addition to giving a sense of place, we want to talk about something that we don't think will come through the door. Or maybe we think it will come through the door, but we have a chance to look at good, better, best in this situation, which are great teachers. So that's how we choose those folks, those pieces. Not easy sometimes. We can be very torn about what to shoot. Yes, I saw other hands.
For the purpose of your show, what is an antique?
For the purpose of our show, we really technically do antiques and collectibles. Because an antique is still what the government defines it to be, and those in the technical definition is 100 years old objects. But we sure do see a lot of collectibles. But it wouldn't be fun to call it Antiques and Collectibles Roadshow. So we sneak and we call it Antiques Roadshow. But yeah, it's still that technical 100 year thing. Yes.
You said you needed about 100,000 square foot area to put on your show. You could squeeze into 75,000. You said you were looking here. What was the largest square footage area you saw?
We looked at the Denina, which is your new convention center. We have been talking to the CVB, the Convention Visitors Bureau, up here for years. And they knew we were waiting for this to be built. And so they knew that we wanted to see this. Before coming up here, we have CAD drawings, everything done. We have our set planned on that, to be in that convention center. It is a little small for us. It's how many square feet is that room? I didn't ask that question. Yeah, it's small. It's a little small. We have to tent. If we're going to do it, we're going to be tenting the streets and other things. It's an unusual situation for us. But let me give you an example of how creative, what a wonderful staff that I have. I am one of 15, by the way, year round. And I have a terrific staff. When we were going to Billings, Montana last year, it was one of our six stops last year. For those of us who fly on Wednesday, on Sunday night at 9:30, I got a call that the roof blew off the arena. And that was one of our buildings. And this is North, and Montana is one of those cities that we were, one of those states that we couldn't go to because it doesn't have a convention center that fits us. And we want to go to every state. We want to get everywhere. So we really, this was really a very creative plan. Crowd was going to be waiting in the arena, and we were going to be lining up and this and that. I will tell you, our event producer, Amy Santamaria, within seconds figured out how to, well, not seconds, it was torture, but she figured out how to do this. And you know what? Thank our lucky stars that it didn't happen the Saturday the next week when the roadshow guests were standing in that arena, right? There are small silver linings in every cloud. So yeah, it is a small convention center for us, but we'll figure it out. Yes.
What's your relationship, if any, to the British Antiques Roadshow?
We pay them money. Roadshow was start. As I said, this is season 15. We're getting ready for season 16. Peter McGee deserves the credit for it was a now retired vice president at WGBH. He loved it. It was his favorite show in England. They are in their 33rd year. We licensed the right to do it from the BBC, and we pay them for that right. And they're very culturally different, even though the format is the same show. We are kissing cousins. They know our pleasure. We know our pain. They've come watch us. We've come watch them. They do many more shows. They don't fly. They don't have to ticket. They can just let people line up because maybe a big show for them is when 2,000 people line up, 2,500. So they don't have we are a big country. So we got big numbers. Yes.
Yes.
Hi. Oh, okay.
You've had several hosts over the years. Who decides who becomes host and what do you look for in a host?
Ultimately, I decide. And what I want in a host is if I could be them, I would be that person. What I want in a host is is someone who has great energy and who's agile. And that's what I believe. Do you like Mark Wahlberg, guys? Okay. And other people have some people, Chris Jussel was their favorite, or Dan Elias, or Lara Spencer, all who remain good friends to the show. But really what we want is viewer advocate. Somebody who will ask the questions, even if he knows the answers you might ask if you were standing there. And someone who can help our appraisers do a good job. Because the only professional talent on Antiques Roadshow is that host. So we want someone who's smart, and I like that Mark asks insightful and smart questions. And I'm glad to hear you like him too. I think he does a great job as a viewer advocate. And let's face it, he is not the star of the show. You folks, the audience is, and the objects really are the stars. Other questions?
I don't know if you noticed or not, but one of your sponsors was Subaru. And if you've driven around the streets in Anchorage or been in the parking lots here, you will see thousands of Subarus, and they're all white like mine, except during breakup. But, you know, you might be able to do a really good plug here with your pitches with Subaru, doing special advertisements here.
Well, I will tell you, Subaru, this is a good marker for Subaru, and you can be sure we know that. Yeah, there are markets that aren't good, but we go to those places too, frankly. We are public television. We don't let sponsorship, we don't let money drive our editorial. Yay! That's what public television is about! Goodness, you know, it's not going to change what we do. We're going to do the right thing editorially because that's what makes us different. Really. Any other questions? Yes.
Please.
That's part of what we do when we select those furniture from the photos that are sent to us. Do we have, how many more, are we wrapping this up, questions, or?
We can take a few more, I just didn't see any more.
Okay, let's do it. Do you have children? I do. It's like asking me to pick one. You're seeing the letter. I don't know, you didn't notice me in the background of the set because you're not looking for it. I don't want to ruin the shot, but I'm walking through. I walk through at the end like, oh my God. This is a producer's dream. I want somebody to do something like this season, so I have a new one to put in there. But what was your question? You know, it really is hard to pick one, but I will say this lettuce really is, and that's why it's in there. But one of the other ones I really like is a $200, I think it's $200 to $300 object. And it's Kathy Bailey. Anybody see the punch bowl base that used to be the christening dish? Okay. This is a delicious moment in life for me. Comedic timing, it's perfect. And this woman whose family had been using this thing as a christening dish for many years, she was christened from it as well. And it's cut glass, and it's just beautiful. And then as Kathy Bailey says to her, however, it is really, boom, the base to a punch bowl. And I love that one. So you see, when you're a roadshow producer, it isn't money anymore for us. I have turned down $200,000 swords because the story was boring and the guests knew everything. We're about discovering America's hidden treasures, not about show and tell of yours. Yes, another question.
Right here? She can't see me.
I can see you.
A few nights ago, the expert was looking at a Tiffany lamp, and she unscrewed the top and took the Tiffany lamp and held it in her hand. Mm-hmm. And my thought was, what if she dropped that? So has anyone ever broken one of the things that's come in?
We've had a couple items broken at Antiques Roadshow. When you hear the crashes in the background, that's the guest. And the expert goes over immediately and says, oh, it was only worth $5, don't worry. True or not? No. But we've had two things. We are self-insured, so we're very careful. And frankly, one of the items was we believe the guest made it look like our fault. She put an object down in front of one of our pottery experts very carefully, and then the minute he picked it up, it came apart. It cost us $300 to fix it, and it was cheaper than fighting with her. And the other time, one of the furniture pieces we moved an automaton. And supposedly after we moved it, the automaton didn't work. And that was a few $100 and we fixed it. Those are the only two items for which Roadshow has been blamed. Otherwise, this is why we feel so bad when they bring in something. This is true. If, in fact, Raphael Ellidge, who does military for us, likes to say that if your house were on fire, after you saved the family, the two items come in a roadshow were the two items they'd save first. So they're precious objects. Yes.
When you come to Alaska, a lot of people would probably bring in things that are unique to Alaska, whether it's native art. How do you, you don't have those people back in Boston. Do you bring them with you? Do you look for people here? How do you bring in experts who know that little special segment?
If you'll note that you have seen baleen baskets on the show. You have seen Tlingit rattles. You have seen Shimshin. You have seen that on our show. Our ethnographic guys do have that knowledge. And frankly, there are 75 experts covering those categories. Now, we'll do some research, and if we feel that, in fact, that area needs to have more people, we may beef up. Normally, that area has three experts sitting in it. And we may decide that for a city like this, we want more than that. We may also decide, after talking with our own experts, that, geez, and they'll know, we may want to work with someone who's top in these and his knowledge or her knowledge here. But our experts, because this is the stuff people covet, this is the stuff that they're selling. You have very desirable things from Alaska.
I've always worried about some of the sweet little old ladies who get this incredible appraisal, and then I worry how will they leave and not be mugged on the way out. So
it's a great question. It really is a great question.
That's a worry.
Roadshow, we have both uniformed and plainclothes police on set. We walk you out to the car if you have a very extreme valuable item. We also instruct you not to tell anyone your last name. Not the press, no one. As a matter of fact, when I'm writing down that little slip of paper that gets you into the green room so people don't cheat, and people, I'll say, what's your name? And they'll start to say, Marsha Bemko. And I'll say, I don't want to know your last name. Don't tell anyone your last name, except for the release you're going to sign in there. And when a reporter says to them, this is something you should all know, a reporter says, I'm not going to print that story if you don't give me your last name. If it's a good story, they will. And if you don't give them permission to print it. So we are very protective of our guests. If their last names are revealed, it's because they've made a mistake, the guests themselves, in doing it. We do not. And even when we have scholarly institutions who write to us, that's the only time, by the way, we will facilitate a relationship. People write to us, I want to buy this, that's nice. But if they want to do some scholarly research, we will forward the request to the guest, and they can do, we ask them to let us know what they're going to do, but we don't force anyone to comply. So we're very careful protecting those little old ladies. Any other questions? We're good? Hey. Thank you. Thank you. I just want to say one more thing before I leave this podium about Alaska. I have been, as I told you, I made my big boast, so I've been around. People, wherever I go, the land is shaped by people. And I find that, frankly, the people in Seattle are nicer than the people in Boston. The people in Billings are nicer than the people in Seattle. Because people where they're spread out, and there aren't many, there's about 900,000 in Montana, need each other. And they're nicer people. And I like you guys an awful lot. Nice people, thank you.
Okay, who wants to help? One of the things we're told we need to bring Antiques Roadshow to Anchorage would be 120 volunteers. So I want you to all leave your name and number outside on the table, and we'll start collecting that information so that we can start making this idea happen in Anchorage. So listen, thank you so much for being here tonight. This is, as I said, the fourth and last in the first APRN speaker series that I believe has been a tremendous success, and we're going to sit down next week and start planning next year's speaker series. So please watch for news about when the event will happen, sometime in the fall, and we will have another wonderful program. Once again, the speakers this year were Peter Kenyon from NPR and Alaska, Richard Nelson from Sitka and the Encounters radio program, Leanne Hansen, the Sunday Weekend Edition host, and wrapping up tonight, thank you again, Marsha Bemko, executive producer of Antiques Roadshow. With that, I believe we are adjourned. Thank you so much for coming tonight.